Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. They say that there's only three types of people in the world. Those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. I'm talking mothers of special needs and very young children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, and a host of others. I can go on and on. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally. The famous Blog Talk Radio Network, YouTube, iTunes, the list goes on and on. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving, and we are going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Yes, we are the champions of helping you to avoid that. Now, we have an exciting show planned for you today, as all our shows are exciting, especially with my lovely co-host Adrienne Gruberg, founder of The Caregiver Space. We will be interviewing author Linda Spalla, and we'll be discussing her new book, Catch Your Breath, and we'll be talking about burnout too. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show, folks. And if you are new to the show, we have many new listeners every single week, especially since we've gone video. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial. And oh yeah, they got this bad habit about burning out because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Now, if we would only listen to the airlines, you know, they give us this wonderful advice every time we board a plane. They say, in the unlikely event of an emergency, please put your oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. And the airlines know what they're talking about because they've seen people black out when they don't see people put their needs above the needs of loved ones. And you know what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. So we're going to help you out. We also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it has on us. That automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. And there's only one way out of the grief process. Anytime you go through loss, you go through it, but you got to go through it. You can't go around it. There's no shortcuts. Sorry, I wish I had better news for you, but we can help you for your grief and loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. And I want to take this time to thank last week's guest, Sherry White, registered nurse with the University of Arkansas for Medical Science. And that was a great interview, and you can listen to that interview and all our interviews, especially this one, on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregivers with an S and caregiver without an S, because I am the caregiver's caregiver. That makes sense, doesn't it? Anyway, while you're there, take a short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, because I'm such a nice guy, I'm going to send you my first book that I wrote absolutely free. What a deal. $10 value. And it's called, what is it called? It's called One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. And it's a story about me and my amazing wife. She makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers. All right, enough of that. Well, Linda, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being patient and agreeing to this interview and, you know, dealing with all the technical difficulties we had this morning. Really appreciate
my
it.
Pleasure. My pleasure.
Hey, why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself? Just who is Linda Spalla?
Well, Linda Spalla, if I can correct you, if you don't Spalla. Mind.
Spalla okay,
is an
I
Italian name. It's an Italian name for shoulders.
Then I got to say Spalla. Ooh. So it's Spala.
That's right. That's
okay, I got
so
it.
So I'm as Southern as a Southern belle can be.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You have a nickname, don't you? What do they call you?
That's an inherited name. No, I don't have a nickname, actually.
Think
not
about
anymore.
Steel Magnolias?
Oh, well, yeah, maybe that is one. Yeah. That's true.
You should read your own bios.
I'm the luckiest person in the world because in 1975, I was divorced, jobless, and homeless. And I had been married to a Methodist minister, and he decided to leave the marriage. And when that happened, because the Methodist church kept the house, the furniture, the cars.
Wait a minute. I thought that was divorce was against their religion.
Well, anyway, long story short, I came back to Huntsville, Alabama, and took a job at a TV station making $98 a week as a sales secretary. And 25 years later, was the president and general manager of that television station. And so I had a great career, fabulous career. The TV station was owned by the New York Times Company. And at the time, it was kind of their heyday. And I just had a fabulous career. Then I retired in 2000 and decided to start writing. And the first book I wrote was a leadership book for women. And then my caregiving book, which we're talking about today, because I cared for my mom. And then my latest book is a book on Paris. So I date a Parisian.
Paris, I love Paris.
Yes, I date a Parisian and have for the last 12 years. And we go to Paris every summer for 2 months. So I have a great life.
Wow. You know, Adrienne has a great life too. She's like in the same position as you in almost. She's dating and, you know, her spouse passed away. And you're happy, right, Adrienne?
Very.
You're the luckiest person.
I miss Steve.
Yeah. Well,
I miss Steve, but I'm happy.
I think it's kind of a fairy tale, a Cinderella story. So. For me.
Well, especially the caregivers who, after their caregiver dies or something happens, you know, they just don't even think about dating anymore. They can't get over it. In fact, they can't get over caregiving. They don't know what to do with themselves. Some people just don't know how to stop caregiving. So, I mean, how did you cope with not being a caregiver? Let's talk about that, because that's a big issue for a lot of people.
With not being a caregiver? You mean after my mom passed away?
Yes. Was it hard for you to stop caregiving?
Actually, to be very honest, no. My response was one of obvious great grief, but my mom was not her life was not a good quality of life. And so it was a combination of grief and relief. And I knew that she died the way she wanted to die. She had always said she wanted to die in her sleep peacefully.
That's a blessing.
And she did. And she lived 8 months longer than they told us that she would. So we had a wonderful 8 months together. And I just knew she was a very spiritual and religious person, the best lady I ever knew. And so I knew she was at peace. She was with my father. So there was a sense of, I had done all the things that I felt like I should do. So I had a sense of peace. And I moved on with my life knowing that she was in the place where she wanted to be. So I was, it was an ambivalence for sure. You know, you're sad, but you're also relieved and joyful. And her funeral was a true celebration.
Mm-hmm. I bet you were really surprised as the months kept going into the eighth month and she's still there and they said she was going to be dead.
Well, there was the ambivalence, you know, like one day they walked in and said, your mom's got 30 days to live. She has this rare form of leukemia that no one had ever heard of. She was 80 years old, so they recommended no chemotherapy. And so I called in hospice, brought her home with me, and You know, we were sitting there literally, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but we were waiting for her to die because that's what they had told us. And
that's why they call them practicing physicians. They haven't got it down
that's
yet.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, the days went into weeks and the weeks went into months. And Mother was the same way. She said, well, I guess I've got more time than we thought. And I said, well, we need to make the best of it. So we tried to.
She didn't suffer that much during that time?
Well, she lost the use of her legs, and so she was in a wheelchair. And my mother was not a complainer, Dave, so I don't know how much she suffered. I would talk to her about it, but she was always looking on the bright side. I had it easy, I think, as caregiving goes, because she was the absolute ideal patient.
Low maintenance.
Low maintenance, yes. But
blessed.
Trying to lift her became a real issue because she wasn't an overweight lady, but she was a tall lady. So she was fairly large and I'm very small. And so trying to lift her and get her to the bathroom and get her, you know, that's where hospice came in. So it was that part of it was hard, but she lost her appetite. That was hard. Everything tasted like metal to her. So she had her moments, but my goodness, you know, I hear all these stories about people who have a very difficult, angry, unappreciative patient to care for. And my mother, she would take my face in her hands at night and say, I love you, precious. Thank you for everything you do. So, you know.
Blessing.
Yeah, she was a blessing to me and still is. I miss her terribly, but she's watching me. Every time I see a red bird, I know it's her. Yeah, yeah. And hummingbirds, the hummingbird flies around all summer, and she loved hummingbirds, so I assume that's her checking in, you know.
So tell me, you're dating, and a lot of people, for whatever reason, find it uncomfortable to date, you know, later on in life. How did you guys meet, and, you know, what was going through your head? What was going through his head, and why are you guys so happy? I know a lot of people would like to know that.
Oh, yeah. Well, we met through a mutual friend who happened to be Bernie's boss. His name is Bernie. Bernard in Francais, in French. And we... You know, my mother never got to know him. This all happened after Mother had passed away. She would have adored him. We went for a drink, had a glass of wine, and sorry about that. Had a glass of wine and enjoyed ourselves, and one thing led to another. He wasn't Mr. Right in my mind, and I almost stopped dating him because he wasn't tall, dark, and handsome, and he wasn't some of the things that I wished he was. But the more I got to know him, the more I realized, hey, this might be the guy I've been looking for a long time. And he is a native Parisian. He left Paris when he was 10. And so, you know, we've been going strong since then.
So you didn't meet in Paris, and have you been to Paris together?
Yes. No, we didn't meet in Paris. We go to Paris every summer for 2 months. And we basically
How romantic.
Live there. Yeah. Great. So
I was there for 3 days one time. It was amazing, and it wasn't long enough.
Oh no, you can't do Paris in 3 days. Absolutely.
No.
No.
And you have to find a hotel right in the center of town because traffic sucks.
Yes, it does. It does. Well, we stay in the same apartment. We don't own an apartment, but we do try to rent the same apartment every year. So, and of course, he speaks fluent French. So I'm on Easy Street. I'm on Easy Street when I'm over there. So
I can say merci beaucoup.
Yes.
And au revoir.
Yeah.
What can you say, Adrian?
Un petit peu.
Ah, there you go.
Oh, I do know one more, and it's not a nice thing. It's ménage à trois, but it sounds so French, you know.
It is French.
You've been to Paris, haven't you, Adrian?
Oui, my honeymoon, and before with my first husband, yes. But I plan on going for a month. Okay. I would like to go for a month every year. But yes. That's another story.
That's the way to really see it. Yes.
Well, let's get back to caregiving here. What would you say? I mean, I'm reading some of the notes you made. You have a hot chocolate story. Why don't you tell that? I always like a hot chocolate story.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, during the caregiving cycle, I think everybody has moments that they wish they could take back. And because I've laid the groundwork for telling you what a sweet, gentle soul my mother was, I had, she liked to sit in a recliner in my little study area in my home. And I had, I'm one of those crazy people who had white carpet, okay? So it was a cold morning in November, and I had made her a cup of hot chocolate almost immediately after I handed it to her, to dump it all over the recliner and the carpet. And I kind of freaked out and screamed at her and scolded her. And it was a moment that I'm not proud of, just because my nerves were a bit frayed, and it was, caregiving is an intense business day in, day out, you know. And she was extremely sorry. She cried, and I felt horrible after I had screamed at her. And she was the one apologizing to me. And I finally walked out of the room, and I went back in and kind of got it in perspective. And I said, you know, you don't need to be apologizing to me. I need to be apologizing to you. But you have to forgive yourself and let those moments happen, because they're going to, for everybody. And I made the decision that day to never do that again. And I never did. So at
least, you. Thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, I know that's not an easy thing to share when we mess up like that. But so many people need to hear that, you know, the best of us mess up, do the wrong thing, do things right. We are not proud of, and, you know, don't feel very good sharing it with the world like you are right now. But that'll give a lot of people freedom. I mean, how long did you beat yourself up over it?
I let things go pretty quickly. I do. And you know, the book is very candid and very open, a series of devotionals, and that's one of the stories that I share in it. And it's a book that ministers to the emotional needs of people. It's not a disease specific book or anything like that. It's not a medical book. It speaks to the heart, and that's one of the stories. And this is a really interesting point, Dave. I wrote that book. My mother died in 2002. Mm-hmm. That book came out in 2015 or so. Mm-hmm. And why did I wait so long to write the book? Well, the answer is because I was having a little bit of difficulty with my own daughter, my adult daughter. And I yearned for my mother to be around to chat with and to talk to, because we had such a great relationship. And so in order to process the trauma I was having with my own daughter, I decided, well, I'm going to write this book because it's going to speak to my soul and give me some peace and hopefully bring peace to other people. So the book is very, very special. And I dedicated it to my daughter, because if it hadn't been for that situation, I might not have ever written the book. So, you know, things, what goes around kind of comes back around.
Yeah. Why don't you share, you know, some noticeable effects on other family members, you know, like your son or your sister, daughter? How did caregiving affect them?
I guess my son, I'd like to share that with you. He was all for my mother coming to live with me, but then one day they came every weekend, he and his wife from Birmingham, to give me a break. They were both nurses. And because, as I said earlier, mother had lost control of her legs, it was really affecting my back. And my son called me out into a separate room one weekend, and he said, "Mom, you don't need to do this anymore. you're going to have to stop it because it's going to kill you. So he said, let's see about finding a really good assisted care facility where we can put, he called her, well, I can't even think now what they did call her. I'm sorry. Anyway, his grandmother, Mama. He called her Mama. He said, let's put Mama in a really good assisted care facility. So he was instrumental in getting me to see that maybe I had pushed the limit on what I could do. And of course, we found a spot, and it was only 3 minutes down the road from where I lived. And I was there most of the day, but there were other people pulling on her and taking her to the bathroom and getting her from one environment to the next, in and out of her wheelchair. So now the situation with my sister, this one's difficult because I think my sister was, she felt very guilty because she wasn't the one who said, look, I'm going to take mother into my home. She told me, she said, I could never do that. You're crazy for doing it. And my sister is now deceased. And so I mean absolutely no disrespect. But she had a difficult go with me because I think she was, on the one hand, guilty, but on the other hand, a little bit jealous of the fact that I was able to do it and keep my sanity. And then when I decided to move her into an assisted care facility, she felt like I didn't consult with her when, in fact, I had written her a long letter about why I needed to do that. So, you know, if there's a little hiccup in a relationship, it's going to get exacerbated during caregiving. And that's exactly what happened between my sister and myself.
What advice would you give people who know that they can't do it any longer, their back is out and they're, you know, it's not best care for their loved one any longer? And I know, Adrian, you come across this a lot, you know, in your website and
sure.
your people that you speak with. But some people just aren't strong enough to make that lunge. And unless they've got a daughter or a son or a sister that forces them or guilts them into doing it, you know, how do they make that decision? Because it's really a life or death decision. It's either their life or their life. And I was just reading, you know, some comments yesterday about someone, and they're describing, you know, all this stuff. And it's obvious that this needs to be done. He says, I just can't do that. You know, what do you tell people who just can't do that? I mean, how resistant were you when you were told that you need to do that?
I was not resistant because I agreed with my son that I was getting very, very, very tired. But, you know, Dave, I think it's about who you are internally. And I'm a very forceful decision maker. Once I make a decision, I move and I don't look back. I think you also have to have a pretty good sense of self-esteem and understand it's okay to take care of yourself. And I knew that I needed to take care of me to be a better caregiver for mother so that those hot chocolate stories wouldn't happen anymore. and so I guess I would say to people, be kind to yourself, you know, forgive yourself, let yourself step back from the situation. In my job as the general manager of a TV station, you know, I was always zooming back the lens and looking down from the 30,000 foot level. And you've got to see the big picture and you've got to be able to take in the vision, the long-term look. And that's kind of what I was doing. Now, my mother was not too happy about the move, and I had to really talk to her about it and assure her that I would be there and there were good people there. I knew the director of this facility, and she gave mother a great big extra dose of TLC. I know she did. Mother made a little bit of an effort to guilt me, but that didn't last very long, and I just didn't accept it. I said, this is what we need to do, this is the best thing. And she ended up being quite happy there, and that is where she finally passed away, in that facility.
So what personality or temperament traits would you say that you have that made that decision easier that maybe someone who did not have those traits would make it almost impossible?
Well, you know, because I've had kind of a rough road in life, I have learned that if I don't take care of me, no one else does. And that's a trait that I have. I like to call it just really good self-esteem, understanding that if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And so I try to get myself in a position where I'm okay, and then I can move forward and do the right things. I got a lot of grit. You know, I understand that nothing is the end of the world. You have to make tough decisions. You have to move forward. And after you go to bed and sleep on a decision, it'll be a little bit better the next day and a little bit better the following day after that. I just don't get into a lot of guilt. I don't get into a lot of regret. I don't get into a lot of second guessing of myself. I do the best I can. And if I make a wrong turn, then I turn in the opposite direction and try to correct it. And I guess that's scary for some people, Dave. I don't know. But for me, it's just the way I've had to live my life. And
Adrienne, she sounds like the perfect caregiver, doesn't she?
Well,
as far as, you know, having a healthy attitude, I mean,
having a healthy attitude, there are a lot of things that Linda's doing that we wish that everybody could do. Yeah. But there are so many people that do feel the guilt and take that on almost
the majority,
above everything else.
The vast almost majority.
Yeah.
So you're really an exception, Linda. I mean, what advice have you found works best with your people, Adrienne, to convince them to become this person of grit?
It's a process. There's no simple answer to that. I mean, you either have it or you don't. Not really. It's something sometimes you just have to dig to find. But I mean, it doesn't sound like Linda had a very tough time knowing that she'd reached her limit.
Right. And, well, I noticed
and if
that
Mama
her son
ain't happy, yeah, but her yes.
I want to know why she waited so long. If your son never said anything, what would have happened eventually? And how long would it have taken, Linda?
Oh, that's a good question. I've never thought about it directly, but
You were kind of waiting a little too long. Maybe you went a little too long in confronting this. So, you know, maybe you weren't.
Yeah. Maybe so. Maybe I did wait a little too long. And he's very candid. He's like his mother. We're both very candid people. And it was kind of the knock on the head, I guess, that I needed. And that positioned me to move on. And like I said, my mother resisted it a bit because it frightened her. She was comfortable in my home.
And it was a confrontation, I would think.
Yeah, it was a bit of a confrontation.
That maybe you weren't really excited to rush into, and let's do it tomorrow. Let's do it next week. Let's do it next month. And then,
well,
you know, 6 months pass.
Had you considered the facility before your son told you?
I had, because I knew the director very, very well, and I knew it was a well-run place. And she had already said something to me about, if you need to do something with your mom, know that I'm here. I'll check on her. I'll be very sure she gets excellent care. So, you know, in the back of my mind, but understand, not knowing whether she's going to die tomorrow,
right,
or in 3 months or in 6 more months, I didn't know.
That's true. You were living on borrowed time.
She was living on borrowed time. That is absolutely right.
Yeah, I bet that was a big part of it too.
Well, it created that ongoing ambivalence. That's where, if I had any guilt, it was like one morning I'd wake up and go, okay, when is she going to die?
Yeah.
30 days. Now it's been 5 months. And then you'd go, oh my goodness, why are you thinking that way? And so you'd have to snap out of that. So yes, there was some ambivalence there, but you just put one foot in front of the other. And we did some neat things together.
Yeah. Was she on hospice all that time?
She was. And, you know, because the day that we got out of the hospital and they had told us that she had no more than 30 days, well, we called in hospice. Well, then they stayed and they stayed and they stayed and they stayed. And they were with her all the way through to the end.
Adrian, what's the longest, I'm sorry for interrupting, Adrian, what's the longest you've ever heard of hospice hanging around waiting for someone to die before they take them off hospice?
I've heard of people being in a hospice facility for like 3+ years or so.
Oh, my. Wow.
They were younger people.
But yeah, not where they're coming into the home.
They were young. They were teenagers, actually.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wasn't as though death was imminent. It was just that hospice care was definitely indicated.
Yes. Right. Dave, I want to say one thing about what you asked earlier about what gave me the ability to make the decision. I think one thing is that I was 56 years old. Some people get hit with becoming a caregiver when they're 40, 45. And I think the older you are, maybe a little bit more settled, a little bit more wisdom, a little bit more in tune with who you really are inside. And so I think that was an asset for me because I was 56. I had just retired. It was like God said, okay, we're going to part the waters. Now you've got time to take care of your mother. And had I been still working, I mean, I had a crazy, crazy job that was 24/7. And almost immediately when I retired, mother found out that she was sick. And so, you know, that's how things work out.
Yeah.
And your son was grown at that point. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. My son was like, he was probably 32.
Okay. Yes. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, my daughter. Well,
listen, time is flying. I've got to take a break and we'll come back. We'll talk more about your book. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received 2 black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships, is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere, but if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy!
And we're back. Let me just figure out how to get rid of this commercial thing here. Okay, screen share. Have to edit that out. Okay. Can you see me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, well, I won't worry about it then because I can't see me. So, let's talk about your book. What is the name of it? And why did you write it, and why did it take you so long? I know you just touched on that briefly.
Right. The name is Catch Your Breath, because literally that's what I want people to do as they read it, is to take a moment, give themselves a break, sit down, drink a cup of coffee, take just a moment to feed their soul. And it's applicable to any disease, to any situation. It's not medically related. It's not disease related. It's not a book for cancer people or for Alzheimer's patients. It's just a caregiving book. And as I said earlier, I wrote it to kind of feed my own soul. Almost 12 years after my mother passed away, it just hit me one day. I was having some difficulties with my own daughter, and I was wishing that she and I had the same relationship that my mother and I had had, and we're getting there. And so I started thinking about mother. I started thinking about all the caregiving episodes that we had, and I decided, okay, the way I know to settle my soul is to write. It's always been that way. I write poetry. And so I decided, why not do a series of meditations and devotionals for people who could either read it day by day, though I have discovered in listening to people that most people got into it and they just read the whole thing through. And that was not really the way it was designed to be read. But as an author, you don't control how people are going to digest your book.
Okay, hold on. Somebody's mic is making a lot of noise. Is that you, Adrian?
Sorry, that was me.
Okay. And Linda, your mic, I think, is touching your chin. If you can just give it some air space.
How we go? How's
great.
That? Better? Okay, good deal. All right.
All right.
And, you know, I had an interesting story happen, if I might share. One day, I'm a Rotarian, and I was at Rotary. And this was shortly after the book had come out, and I had presented the book to my Rotary Club. And this gentleman came up to me, and I knew him pretty well. And he said, "I need to see you after the meeting. I want you to come to my office." And I thought, how strange, you know? So I go to his office. And he said, "I just want you to sit down and I want to talk to you about your book." And as it turned out, he had cared for his mom, and he felt as though he had had the exact identical journey. His mother had been a wonderful caregiving patient, easy. He did many of the same things that I had done. And for an hour, he just wanted to talk to me about all of this. And that's why you write. As to get feedback like that, it was not $1 million in my pocket, but it felt almost as good because it was very, very special to him, and thus became very special to me. So I've gotten a lot of good feedback, and I hope the book, you know, I just wanted it to be a bright spot for people.
So when you say it's meditation, so someone's feeling anxious or guilty or freaked out, they can just sit down, take 5 or 10 minutes, read your book, and they're going to feel better?
I think so. I think so. Every day has a different episode. You know, the hot chocolate story is in there. It's a progression. It's in chronological order as I worked through the process from the moment of discovery of what we were dealing with all the way through how to do a funeral, how to process the funeral. I went through prior to that, getting her into the assisted living facility. But then there's a few meditations at the very end about how to process, as you asked me earlier, how does it feel not to be the caregiver anymore? One of the meditations is about going to the mailbox after mother has passed away. And of course, having lived with me all those months, we had had her mail delivered to me. And I opened the mailbox one day and there's a piece of mail addressed to her. And of course, she's not there. And I just remember sitting on the curb and just breaking into a sob because it brought back all those feelings of sadness and wishing and hoping that she were still with me. And you know, how you process that. And I had a minister tell me, you know, you never get over it, because why would you want to get over your love for your mother? You just get through it. And you move on. Yes, you move on down the line. So
how long was that particular meditation that you just spoke about in your book?
Oh, they are anywhere from 2 pages to 3 pages. I mean, it doesn't take long. There are probably, I think there are 65 or something like that. I should have gotten the book out before we got on.
I was going to ask you to read the shortest one, you know, 30 or 60 seconds. If I know you weren't prepared for that. I don't even know if you have the book within reach.
I don't. It's in the other room. I'm sorry. If we take another break, I can run and get it. But there is one that I was excited that the old magazine, the Oprah Winfrey magazine, picked up on one of the meditations. They did a caregiving.
Really?
They did a caregiving section in November. The November the book came out, they had a whole section on caregiving, and I had sent one of the meditations in because they had a call for a call for entries on that kind of material. And I was in Paris one morning, opened up my email, went to Facebook, and a friend of mine had posted, OMG, Linda's book is in O Magazine. And it was a tiny little mention. It was not anything. It's not like being in Oprah's book club or anything like that. But what a thrill that was. It was fun.
Oh, that would be such a thrill for me. I know that I've always thought about that. I have a gas station on Interstate 5 in California that, you know, Oprah always talks about going camping up in the mountains.
Yeah.
And she drives right by my station because I'm at the bottom of the hill and everybody comes in because they're out of gas and they got to use the restroom and they need coffee. And I'm there and I've got my books prominently displayed on the counter. And I am just not giving up that she's going to walk in one day.
There you go.
And there say, oh, my God, look at this book.
Yes. Well, it was a neat thing. And the meditation they picked up on was the one my mother had a bell that she would ring when she wanted something. And that's how she would summon me. And I described that crystal bell in great detail. Remember, I'm a poet. And they actually had a little picture. They had conceived what the bell would look like and had put that picture in. And so that was kind of neat. And it was just a very brief mention, and it gave my name and the city of Huntsville, Alabama. So that was kind of fun. It was certainly promotable, I will say that.
Well, good for you. So did things change after you were on Oprah?
Well, I wasn't on Oprah. I mean, you know, I was in the magazine.
Well, the Oprah connection, you know.
Not significantly, no. I have to be honest, no, because there were the whole section, there must have been 20 pages of caregiving material, and there were probably 50 different things mentioned. It wasn't like, oh, this is the big deal about Linda Spala's book. It was just one of many, 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 many. But a lot of people bought the magazine and gave me copies. I've got probably 50 copies of that magazine. But it was just fun. It was a fun thing. And I'm very realistic, Dave. As you know, writing is very hard business. And you don't write to make a lot of money. I mean, right. if you're already famous, then you've got a predetermined path of success. But if you're not already famous, it's just what it is, and you write because it fulfills your soul, and that's why I wrote that book. And I still get a lot of good feedback about it.
Do you have any experiences in there about the dance lessons that you had, or hiring babysitters for your mother, or stuff like that?
Well, as I said earlier, I take care of myself, and realized during this period of time, I was not dating anyone. I did not have, I was single. I was doing everything myself. I did not have a spouse. And so as I said, there was no place to fill up my gas tank. And so I decided, because there's a dance studio not far from where I live, I would hire a sitter. And I was only 2 or 3 minutes away, and I would go twice a week and take dance lessons. And what did that do? Well, someone was touching me. Someone was embracing me. Someone was whirling me around and making me feel free, because I felt like I was kind of in a cage.
What a great idea.
It was the most releasing thing, and it really, and Mother was all for it. She would say, oh, how was your dance lesson, and what did you do today? And it was just wonderful. It was expensive as can be, but it was fun. And so I really enjoyed that.
Adrian and I are always sorry again for interrupting. Got so much on my mind. If it doesn't come out, I'm going to forget it. We're always telling people to have hobbies, you know, and I don't think I've ever spoken on the show about dancing. I just never thought about that. Have you ever recommended anyone should take dance lessons, Adrian?
No, but I have said that there's something about being touched and held. And dancing certainly fulfills that. It's a great idea. Plus the free moving spirit. It's great.
Yeah, touching thing, especially if someone's hesitant of thinking about dating or whatever. That's a good way of getting your feet wet.
Yes.
I mean, I have given people gifts of massage, if just to feel. Just to have somebody touch them, it really has made a difference.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree completely. I go every week. See, there again, you know, I take care of myself. I have a massage every week. Yeah, because that's important to me. And I also have horrible arthritis in my toes. That's more information than you need to know.
Me too. Yes.
But I also, during the time that Mother was sitting in that recliner where she spilled the hot chocolate, my computer was within, you know, 2 feet of that chair. And I wrote 500 poems while I was caring for her. And will I ever do anything with them? Probably not, because nobody publishes poetry. You know that. It's very difficult to get poetry published. But it fed my soul. And sometimes I would read them to her. Sometimes I wouldn't, because some of them were quite intimate. You know, I had just broken up with a guy, and he had broken my heart. And so I was like, you know, getting rid of all of that angst and getting it out of me. But some of the poems I could read to her. In fact, I wrote a poem about her, which was read at her funeral. So, you know, it was a good thing for me. But there again, I figure out a way to crawl my way through whatever is out there. And the poetry writing, the dance lessons, I tried my walking, but we bought Mother. Now, remember, this was 2001. Yes, this was 2001. And so we bought some little walkie-talkies, and I gave her one, and I would take one, and I'd say, now, if anything happens, you just just have to call, push this button and call me. And I wouldn't get but about four houses down the street. And she would push that button and tell me that she needed to go to the bathroom. And I'd say, Mother, we just went to the bathroom. And I'd go, well, she would say, I know, but I need for you to come back. So I'm a 2-mile-a-day walker, and that just didn't work. So that's why I did the dance lessons. And finally got a really great sitter named Sally, who came, and Mother adored her. And I think she could tell Sally things that she couldn't say to me. Mm-hmm. You know, she could say, you know, my daughter's driving me crazy with yada, yada, yada. And let me tell you about the hot chocolate that I spilled. You know, it gave her somebody to talk to. And then
you have such a great attitude, great caregiving attitude. I wish everybody had your attitude and your self-esteem. You keep mentioning self-esteem, and you know, we don't talk about self-esteem much when it comes to caregiving, but that really is, I think, what it is. We're not good enough, or, you know, my needs aren't as important as your needs. And that's a form of self-esteem. And I'm going to use that more, because maybe that will reach you. I'm always looking for new ways of describing or convincing or sharing or visual pictures, you know.
Right. Something else I did with Mother that was so neat that I'd like to share. Two things, actually. We turned, I had a fairly large master bathroom, and we turned that into a beauty shop periodically. And my hairdresser, we'd put a big piece of plastic down. My hairdresser would come over, and she would cut Mother's hair and style it, and it make her feel so good. And of course, she was in her wheelchair, but that was okay. And the rest of that story, though, is that when Mother passed away, the hairdresser knew exactly how Mother liked her hair, and she actually went to the mortuary and did Mother's hair for me. That's quite a gift.
Yeah,
that someone does for you. And her mother looked just like herself when she was there for her viewing, because the hairdresser knew exactly how to do her hair. So that's another one of the little meditations. Mm-hmm. Another thing we did that was fantastic was I had her make a tape for each of the grandchildren in her voice, talking about their young life and all the things she had done with them. And she was scared to death to do that. So we practiced, and I would write down an outline, and then I would leave the room and I'd say, well, now we're just practicing today. So I'm going to turn the recorder on and you just talk. Here's the points that you're going to cover. Just think about it. And so each of the children have a tape of Mother's voice. I think I said grandchildren. Actually, it was my children, because some of the grandchildren weren't even born then. But my son and my daughter have a tape of their grandmother talking to them about their lives when they were younger. And, you know, that process, because we worked at it, that took about 3 to 4 weeks. So it gave her something to do and something to think about. And one other thing I'd like to suggest that I didn't have access to because of it was 2002, but today, get them an iPad and teach them how to use it. And there's so many things they can do to entertain themselves on an iPad. So,
yes, my wife was very hostile toward any computer device, but she has an iPad now, and I can't get her off it. I mean, it's replaced the It's replaced the television set, you know, with Netflix and all that.
That's right. It's just a great, you know, their minds are not dead because their bodies are failing. Their minds are usually, unless they have Alzheimer's, still really good. And Mother was sharp as a tack. So, you know, I wish that the timing had been better and I could have gotten her something like that. But that's another piece of advice I would give.
Well, we're running out of time. I don't think we're going to have time for you to get your thing. They're just going to have to buy the book. Adrian, you have any questions for this amazing lady?
I just wanted to say the fact that writing was so important. It's very important to me. Oh. And I do a column on my site called The Page Listens, because that was who I could talk to. That was where it all went. It all went down on the page. So I always felt relieved. I wasn't a poet, but I was a storyteller. And I can't stress enough how important I feel the writing experience is. And I think for the patient, being able to tell the story, and it's something that you were able to share with your mother to do that for your children.
Right.
You can also just have the patient talk about themselves and answer questions that you've always wanted to know, because they're the ones that, you know, they carry their stories to their grave, and anything you want to know after that.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree 100%. Well, I hope you both will read the book, because I think it will be it will be helpful, and it will
is
be
it digital also? Is it an ebook as well?
It is not an ebook. My Paris book is an ebook, but I don't think the caregiving book is.
Very easy to convert. You should consider it.
You know, it may be. I haven't looked at. I'm sorry, I haven't looked at it in a while. It may be in an ebook. Go on Amazon.
They're both on Amazon. What's your in closing? What's your best advice about, you know, how to be a good recipient of caregiving? You know, the other side of the caregiving coin.
Yeah, the other side is to have the discussion with your children. Most people don't want to talk about and tell their kids what they want. Tell your children, look, I want to stay in my home. I want to come live with you. I want to find a great special facility to stay in. People don't want to have that discussion. So your children are clueless about what you really want. And then prepare. Get a will, get an advanced medical directive. Do all those necessary steps so your kids don't have to be in the
long-term
dark.
Care insurance while you're young
long-term
enough that it's affordable.
Insurance. That's right. Long-term care insurance, which I do have.
Yeah.
And let your kids know where all of that information is, how to access it. Get them on your safe deposit box entry. Get them on your checking accounts. You know, I've done most of all of that and keep my will up to date. Keep the advanced medical directive with each of our hospitals in the community. But for some reason, people just don't want to talk about it. It's like if they don't talk about it, then they're not going to die and they're not going to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And nothing could be further from the truth. And we all know that. But it's that avoidance of the conflict, I suppose.
So I assume you've had that conversation with your children?
Oh, absolutely. I have a document in my computer that tells them what color of shoes I want to wear inside my coffin. So, no, I'm just kidding. I'm very specific about my wants, and I have my funeral laid out, and I have just designated everything that each person gets. And ask them to please not sell my very special collections for $5 at
an garage sale.
Yes, right. But we all know how adult children are and how they process that. So it's probably in one ear and out the other, but at least I've tried.
Well, Linda, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. Thank you so much for coming on the show. How can anyone get a hold of you or get the book?
The book is available on Amazon, certainly. You can also walk into a Barnes & Noble and order it. I doubt that it's on anybody's shelves right now, but they will order it for you. You can contact me on my website, lindaspalla.com.
That's S-P-A-L-L-A, lindaspalla.com. That's how they find you on Amazon as well.
That's right. And if they're interested in Paris, they can sign up for – I do a blog every day from Paris. They can subscribe to my blog. And we send out gorgeous photographs that Bernie takes.
Oh, my. So how do you sign up for that?
You just go on lindaspalla.com, and there's a prompt that comes up that says subscribe here. And you enter your email, and every time I do a blog from Paris, you will get an email prompt.
I'm going to do that.
That links you directly. So we have a great time with it. And we leave on June 1st. I'm telling the whole world.
We're actually going to to Paris on June 1st?
Yes, and we'll be there through June and July.
Is it just you and him, or you're taking a bunch of people with you?
It's just the two of us, but my son and his whole family are coming over for 10 days, so I'm super excited. I have a 13-year-old and a 10-year-old that I'm going to show Paris to.
You should plan a blogging trip for all your bloggers, and, you know, we all get together.
That's right.
I think that'd be fun.
Yeah. Oh, that would be fun. Yeah.
Don't you think that'd be fun, Adrian? You'd come, wouldn't you?
Well, when I win the lottery, Dave, we'll do that. We'll work it out.
No, you don't have to pay. Everyone has to pay their own way.
Oh, well, now that would work. That's what Garrison Keillor does. You know, Garrison Keillor does a cruise every year. So.
Yeah, well, I think you're big enough to do your own cruise. You've got a Parisian blog, for gosh sakes.
Well, it is a lot of fun. Bernie is a great photographer. I write. He takes the pictures.
Adrian, how can our listeners reach you? Adrian, can you hear me? Cannot hear Adrian. Adrian, did you mute yourself? Well, okay, I'll tell you how you can get a hold of her. It's Adrian, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org. And she has a Facebook page with the same name, without the .org, of course. And if you want to write her, it's Adrian at thecaregiverspace.org. And she is an amazing person, has an amazing website, amazing platform, amazing Facebook page. And she has about 160,000 people who would agree with me that she's amazing because they're all following her.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And we're so fortunate to have her co-hosting with us here. Makes us feel special. And just a reminder, all our live shows become recorded pod and video casts on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And the video casts are on YouTube and like everywhere. So when you're on my site, don't forget to take that short quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout, to assess where you are in the burnout process and to get your free copy of my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. Absolutely free. So until next Tuesday at noon Pacific time, may God richly bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.